Hi, everyone. I apologize that for some reason the live recorder didn't work on Sunday morning for the sermon on the 22nd of September. But that's all right. Let me just do a quick version of it. The title of the sermon is God Uses Bad Things for Good. I kind of wish we could move on to a different topic rather than suffering and bad things, but hey, that's where Philippians is taking us. We're going to be in Philippians 1, verses 12 through 18. Check out the bad day that Paul is having here as he's in prison in Rome. Even though it was 2,000 years ago, God, we just really feel like I can relate to what he's going through. Pay special attention to his incredible attitude. Philippians 1, 12 through 18. And I want you to know, my dear brothers and sisters, that everything that has happened to me here has helped to spread the good news. For everyone here, including the whole palace guard, knows that I'm in chains for Christ. And because of my imprisonment, most of the believers here have gained confidence and they boldly speak God's message without fear. It's true, some are preaching out of jealousy or envy and rivalry, but others preach about Christ with pure motives. They preach because they love me, for they know that I've been appointed to defend the good news. But those others, they don't have pure motives as they preach about Christ. They preach with selfish ambition, not sincerely, intending to make my chains even more painful to me. But that doesn't matter. Whatever their motives, false or genuine, the message about Christ is being preached either way, and so I rejoice. And I will continue to rejoice. So obviously, I just think it's clear the main point of this passage is that even bad things in your life can be used by God for good. This fits really well with the whole theme statement of Philippians that we're using. Here it is. True lasting joy is only experienced in a dynamic personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And believing in your mind, because the mind is key in Philippians, believe in your mind that God is able to turn unpleasant circumstances for our good and to his glory. I think this goes right along with what Jenny spoke about last Sunday about the deeper still. And I love Corrie Ten Boom's quote, "There's no pit so deep that God's love is not deeper still." See, what Paul is saying is that everything that's happened to him, even the bad things, have been used by God for good and have actually advanced the gospel. Now that's hard to imagine when your ace player is on the sidelines. Your number one draft pick is gone. Paul is not in the game anymore. He's in jail. So how could he possibly be experiencing joy? Well, number one, he's rejoicing despite his rival preachers. I'm going to kind of start at the end of this passage and go backwards. Because again, it's so important that Paul is rejoicing. He honestly and truly is full of joy. So much so he repeats it twice in one phrase. Why is he rejoicing? Because the good news about Jesus is being preached, even if some are preaching the message for selfish reasons, wanting to harm Paul's reputation. I guess we need to ask the question, who are these people? Who wanted to hurt Paul? From this passage, we don't know for sure. He doesn't describe them. But we do know that they were believers. They were leaders in the church as well. They are boldly preaching Christ. But they seem to be hurting Paul while doing the preaching. Verse 17, if I remember right, it says, "They preach out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, intending to make my chains more painful." I mean, although I'm not 100% sure, I'm pretty convinced that these Christian leaders are the famous Judaizers. Now, Rome had a number of house churches. That's important. They didn't have one big congregation and meet in an arena somewhere. These were just small groups, and obviously some of the leaders in these house churches were Jewish converts. And some of them did not like Paul's message of racial unity. These Jewish Christians, they wanted to stay separate from the Gentiles as much as they could. And they were jealous of Paul's success. They didn't They didn't like how he was uniting the non-Jews and the Jews together as he started new church movements. And so, really, I think they saw Paul's imprisonment as fair punishment from God, an opportunity for them to preach the gospel with their bent, and probably by attacking Paul in the process, harming his reputation. And what's amazing to me here in this passage is that Paul doesn't even take a moderate stance here. He doesn't even warn the readers about these guys. He just gives his rivals, his antagonists, he gives them total 100% freedom. And he excuses their personal attacks on him, all for the sake of the gospel being preached. I just have to ask that question. Does that make any sense? Does that make sense to you? Paul is full of joy, even though he's in prison, and even though there's some Christian leaders bad-mouthing him as they preach. But regardless, he's full of joy because Christ is being preached. Yeah, it doesn't make human sense, but I sure like it. I mean, if something bad happens to you, you guys flip out. I mean, I know, I've seen your Facebook posts. You flip. But take note, this is important, I guess. The message is rejoice, not the messenger. Paul's not thrilled that these jealous preachers are talking smack about him. But he gives them grace here. Even though Paul's natural inclination would be to defend himself. And remember, Paul really was completely innocent here. He wasn't always as gracious in his letters about his opponents. He called some of them dogs. He called some mutilators of the flesh. He said that they sometimes follow deceptive spirits, demonic teachings. So what Paul's doing here in Philippians is noteworthy. All he cares is this is being preached to people who've never even heard the name of Jesus before. So let's go back now to the first paragraph, verses 12 through 14. Let's find out if there are more reasons why Paul is so full of joy, even though he's in jail. Maybe we can learn the secret to joy from him. Actually, I said it was a paragraph. Really, it's not a paragraph in the original Greek. The translators put commas and periods in the whole structure for the English readers. But in reality, this is one long sentence in the original language. Paul does this a lot. So again, verses 12 through 14, one long sentence. Let's try it. Ready? And I want you to know, my dear brothers, that everything that has happened to me here has helped to spread the good news. For everyone here, including the whole palace guard, knows that I'm in chains because of Christ. And because of my imprisonment, most of the believers have been gained confidence and they boldly speak God's message without fear. Paul gives two examples of how him being in jail and in chains has been a negative thing used by God for good. Do you see it in verses 12 through 14? Number one, this first example is that the whole palace guard, the praetorian, the whole palace guard knows that Paul is not a common criminal, but he's in chains for Christ. This is so cool, isn't it? If each guard has a four-hour shift with Paul, man, he has his own captive audience to talk about Jesus with. Now, this palace guard reference is pretty interesting, I think. Most think that this term proves that Paul was in jail at Rome and not in Ephesus. There's written proof that the Praetorian Guards may have been as many as 9,000 soldiers. Obviously, not all of them got to be with Paul. But when we're talking 9,000, we're talking many different levels of security. Now, in the U.S., we have CIA, FBI, Homeland Security, ATF, State Police, County Sheriff, City Police, and even more than that. And that's not even including the military. But in Rome, they would all fit under this one heading of the palace guard. Many of them got to be in the room with Paul, and can you imagine how the word of God spread throughout Rome as more and more of the guards heard the gospel message of Christ? That's so cool. And even though Paul isn't out traveling around Europe and Asia spreading the gospel, at least he's in a public prison where many guards get this one-on-one evangelism. And Paul's rejoicing about that. There's another reason why Paul is really full of joy, and that's because the believers in Rome are now being very bold and intentional to share the gospel, since Paul can't do it as effectively as before. So the believers in Rome are now being very bold and intentional to share the gospel, since Paul cannot do it effectively as before. I think it's important that we pause here, and we need to talk about this. We need to think about what this means to us. Because I know how it works. It's human nature to let the professionals do most of the work. While the rank and file believer just kind of sits in the chair and enthusiastically watches. I think American Christianity overall, man, it's just, it looks more like a football game in a stadium. There's 22 exhausted participants that are playing on the field, and then there are thousands of spectators watching them do all the work. I think that's a fairly accurate description of the American church at large. We're spectators in the pews. But I love what Paul is writing about here. Since he's in jail, and since he can't be out leading people to Jesus, the spectators are starting to leave their seats. They're starting to put on the gear. They're getting onto the field because there's room for lots more than 22 players. And all these people are starting to play the game themselves. And Paul is full of joy because of that. Sometimes I feel I'm guilty of this huge problem in the U.S. I know I need to be even more intentional of allowing Two Rivers Church people to be the ministers. And as great as it is for us to meet on Sunday mornings for prayers and worship, preaching, fellowship, we need to focus more of our attention on what Two Rivers Church is doing in the community Sunday afternoon through Saturday. That's got to be more of the focus. We need to put flesh on our infamous phrase that we say at the end of the service, go be the church. Remember, guys, you might be the only Jesus that some people will ever see. And I believe God is drawing people to himself, and he's going to give all of us the opportunity to shine for him. A few weeks ago, I challenged you from Colossians 4 to make the most of every opportunity to brag on God. And I want to challenge you again to be God's ambassadors. Don't be a secret agent for the Lord. Become a player. Get into the game. I think this is one of the secrets for experiencing real joy. I'm going to be honest and confess here, I missed out on one of those opportunities a couple weeks ago. I went with Bonnie to a neurologist to see what could be done about the nerve damage that's in my leg. And after a number of shocks and pokes and injections, which just really made my day, I was given the bad news that the damage is pretty severe, and it might be over a year before the feeling in my foot comes back. I know some of you have experienced this as well. It's nothing new. But it's just a drag, isn't it? It's not the news I wanted to hear, I'll tell you that. It was really discouraging to hear that from a specialist who really seemed to know what he was talking about. So I just kind of stayed quiet, kept my eyes down. The doctor mainly spoke to Bonnie because, you know, she's a nurse and they like to talk. So, but after a while, we thanked the doctor and just left. And even though I got bad news and I didn't swear at him. I didn't, like, go irate. I didn't do anything like that. But couldn't I have, I think I should have made at least a very simple statement of faith to that doctor. I even thought about what I could have said. Here's what it is. Well, doc, honestly, that's not the news I was hoping for. But I want you to know that I'm a follower of Jesus, and so I believe that God is in control of my life and that he'll make something good come out of all this. So I wasn't preaching and not being weird. What I'm simply doing is what I call raising the flag, right? Letting that doctor know that I follow Christ. I missed an opportunity. I really did. And I don't want to miss out again. In fact, I've got someone coming to buy something off of Craigslist, and if I get the chance, I'm asking God for the chance just to simply brag on God somehow. Could you do that this week as well? See, Paul is able to brag on God and see the positive in a very negative situation. How could you do the same in your day-to-day life? How could you keep a smile on your face knowing that God is in control, even though some horrible things have happened to you or are happening all around you? I mean, here's a depressing list for you that fits. Every single one of these things I'm talking about is something someone in our church has struggled with. Some of you just weren't able to graduate from high school, and you struggle to get a good job. You struggle with that label of dropout. Some of you have experienced the hurt and the failure of divorce. Some of you never knew your dad. Some never knew the love of a parent. Some of you have been raped. You've been sexually molested. Some of you have became slaves to meth or alcohol or pain meds. Some of you were fired or laid off from your job and it wasn't your fault. Some of you are married to someone that you have a real hard time loving. Many of you are plagued by illness or disease or chronic pain. Some of you are disappointed by the choices of your children. Some of you can't find a mate. You can't find a spouse to share your life with. Some of you won't be able to retire from your job, you just realized. Some of you got in trouble with the law many years ago, but it just continues to haunt you and affect your life. On and on I could go with some very real things. And it's an awfully depressing list, isn't it? Bad things. And I want you to know that all these things that have happened to at least one of you here, they were never designed by God. Those bad things were never God's original intention for you. God didn't cause them to happen. The reality is that we live in a world with sin, and we live under the curse of sin. And so that's why these bad things happen. See, in a world without sin, with no Satan, I don't think any of those things would ever happen in our lives. But due to sin, due to bad choices, either by you or by someone else, you now live with the consequences of these bad things happening to you. And here's my main point. While God didn't cause them to happen, what will He do? He will use them for your good, for your joyful attitude during the hard times. It's hard not to mention Romans 8:28. And I know that in all things, God works together for the good for those who love Him. See, God never promised to eliminate all the difficult things in your life, but He did promise that He would walk with you through those difficulties. And Paul is teaching us that we can experience real joy even though we go through hard times, and as long as the gospel is being proclaimed in a positive way, Paul keeps rejoicing, we need to as well. I closed our service last Sunday with showing a video of a song by the Martins called The Promise. If you get a chance, I'd like you to YouTube that. The Promise by the Martins. You'll love it. It's great. God bless you guys. Go be the church.